Okay, thanks, Tom. Actually, we know each other precisely 10 years, more or less, which is good. Okay, we're talking about the Samba open LDAP integration in a large governmental organization, whatever that means. I was asked to not name the customer in the official paper, so, and you're not getting this presentation in digital or in paper form, so please bear with me. First thing I would like to discuss is why is it so important that public sector customers pick up Linux so quickly in Germany? This is primarily a German item. I don't know what's happening in other countries. So the first thing is, I've been talking to various types of customers in the past few years, and in very many cases, customers would ask, where are the reference projects? Do you know any other customer who did that before in our branch of the industry? So this is more or less like your chicken and egg problem. If you don't have any reference projects, you don't get any, right? And this is why the public sector is like a pioneering entity in sorts of way, like the town of Schwäbisch Hall, who did that about 1 year ago. I think the migration is now finished. Like the Federal Ministry of Finance, which we would have heard of if our SUSE colleague would have been here now. The police of Lower Saxony, who did more or less all of the migration themselves. You may have heard about that in the press. Like the town of Munich, who didn't even really start the project. The DLR, who is building an infrastructure for the Columbus Space Lab, which is going to the ISS, hopefully by end of the year. And the project I'm talking about today, which is the German Bundestag. You probably all heard about this project because it was discussed very broadly in the press in Germany. You may remember the Bundestags.de initiative, who had this website online. The website is still there, but today something else is happening there because the decision, as you know, was made about 2 years ago that the German Bundestag is going to migrate to Linux. And we're going to discuss the reasons and why they did that. And you may have wondered what happened to this project, because today it is not discussed in the public very broadly. First thing I would like to talk about to you is the number of IT users. This is primarily a thing for the German attendees in this room. Does anybody know or have an idea how many IT users we have in the German Bundestag? Votes, please, except my colleagues from CompuNet. Shut up. Anybody else? Yeah? 5,000 is a good bet. Anyone else? Come on, folks. I'm not biting you. Maybe. Yeah? 8,000 is a good bet, but they are not wasting that much of our tax money, actually. So what we have is 603 members of the Bundestag, right? We have 603 electoral districts and one per district. But they do have a couple of assistants, about 1,200. And some assistants within the districts, too. So that everything does not get that boring. I don't know if they have cigars, but let's leave it that way. 800 assistants in the factions, in German Fraktionen, and 2,400 administrative assistants. This is where our tax money goes, folks. That sums up to about 6,000. So 5,000 was a good bet. Please applause for the gentleman in the back. Okay, the former IT infrastructure, so-called the status quo ante, let's call it that way, which was installed by CC CompuNet about 4 years ago when the Bundestag moved from Bonn to Berlin. They had a couple of servers. It was all a Windows NT4 infrastructure, right? A number of servers. They had a couple of application servers running on Unix and Linux back then, like a couple of typical Unix infrastructure stuff like the DNS. But everything else, including the workstations, were Windows NT4. About 5,000 desktop PCs, 4,500 of which were located in Berlin, plus a couple of PCs within the electoral districts. 600 notebooks for the better paid folks, and 3,000 local printers. And the network consists of the following components. First, it's the IVBB, Informationsverbund Bonn-Berlin, which was initially meant to empower people to do things like video conferencing between Bonn and Berlin. A couple of ministries still have entities and estates within Bonn, for example, the Ministry of Defense, and most of the staff is now in Berlin. Actually, it turned out that most of the people liked to travel, so that this infrastructure is not really used today, which is a shame. Secondly, we have the LVN, which connects about 30 logical estates and an ISDN, DSL, VPN-based network to connect all of the electoral districts to the network in Berlin. Now, what were the reasons to migrate for the Bundestag to begin with? The Germans amongst you may remember the discussions about 2 to 2.5 years ago, which were discussed in the press widely. The same reasons to migrate still hold true when you discuss these topics with other customers today, especially in the public sector. The first reason was probably that Microsoft announced that Windows NT 4.0 support was going to cease by end of 2003. As you know, it was prolonged by end of this year, but then it's really lights out. Nothing else is going to happen. So they had to do something. The second reason was that they purchased a lot of new hardware, many features of which weren't probably supported by Windows NT 4.0, like USB stuff, etc. So they wanted to do something there too. Having new PCs, new toys, without an operating system supporting it is a boring thing, right? Next thing, they wanted to get vendor independent. They thought that it can't be that German tax money just goes to Seattle, Washington, which is right in a certain way, right? MS licensing costs. Microsoft has a couple of interesting ideas about licensing fees, and the German Bundestag said, well, that can't be in a way. IT security. Interestingly, the Bundestag has not been using Microsoft Outlook, for example, as a client, but they use Netscape Communicator as the web and mail tool of choice, which also has its problems, but not that many, maybe. And last but not least, it was a political decision. There was a will to move away from Microsoft. And this is a very important thing. For example, the town of Schwäbisch Hall did this migration too. And they threw overboard many old things. They had an easy way to go because many applications were running on the mainframe so that they could access the mainframe applications using X3270, for example. But these political decisions, these decisions are very important. If you have somebody high up who makes a decision like that, it mostly works because there are not that many technical obstacles when you think about the server infrastructure. The desktop is something different, but this is just server, right? They may have had some more reasons which we don't want to talk about today. Okay, there was a study made by a company named Infora about 2 years ago, slightly more than 2 years ago, actually. And they tested in the study a couple of alternatives for the infrastructure. So in the middle column, the part before the slash is the server infrastructure and the part behind is the client, right? So the first alternative they checked was moving everything to Windows 2000 server on the server infrastructure and to Windows 2000 or XP, which wasn't clear at that time, on the desktop. The second alternative was move everything to Windows 2000 server and keep some things on Linux which have been running on Unix or Linux before. So this is more or less the keeping up the status quo and just migrating to a more modern Microsoft operating system, and the desktop is Windows XP. The third one, actually it's 2B, is just the other way around. It's migrating everything to Linux which works on Linux and only keeping those parts on Windows 2000 which need to run there because some application may not exist on Linux, for example, NetInstall or something. Which has some less points. They did have a scoring technique, which I don't know too much about. But as you see, according to the score, the 2A variant has more points than the 2B. The third one is moving everything to Linux on the server. And the fifth one, with number 4, which is confusing for me as well, is moving everything to Linux. which has the least points, probably caused by things that simply don't work on the desktop that well. And if you consider all these things and calculate, what happens is that variant 2B turned out to be about 5% more expensive than variant 2A. We're talking about a 9 to 10 million euros ballpark, just for your information. So that's the migration costs. Huh? No, that's the total. That's not the 5%. By God, no. This is the scoring system made by the Infora study. It's just to show you that variant 2A had the best scoring, and it was not the most expensive, but it was not chosen, as we see in the next slide. Because the decision of the senior council finally was that all the servers will be migrated to Linux, except those applications which simply don't run or which aren't available on Linux. And OpenLDAP is being used as the directory service. They said explicitly, we will not use Active Directory. The motivation to say that is probably because they were running a pure Windows NT 4 infrastructure before, in the 4 years before that. And they said, we simply don't need all these AD features, so let's keep it that way. It just works. Second one is the workstations will run Windows XP with the associated Office package. As far as I know, and rumors have it, that OpenOffice was discussed as well as the Office package, but finally they decided to use Microsoft Office. By the way, this presentation is now run on Microsoft PowerPoint within crossover Office on SUSE Linux. It's not running on OpenOffice, mainly because OpenOffice keeps letting me down on inline JPEGs and GIF images. It keeps forgetting them, which is kind of annoying. So just a comment, just a side note. And Netscape is used as a standard web browser and email client. This is not quite up to date. Actually, they're talking about Mozilla 1.6 today, which is the most recent production version. And as far as I'm concerned, I would ask them also to use the Multicilla plugin, right? But this is just for geeks, and most of them aren't geeks. Okay, the source of that is the press release from about 2 years ago. Okay, that was pretty much it. It's now going to be a little bit more technical. I would like to start with a very small primer about LDAP. This is just for those folks in the room who are even less familiar with LDAP than myself, of which there aren't probably that much. So, directory services. It's not just anything. We're talking about really a proven infrastructure. Directory services, LDAP as a whole, is not a new technique. It's quite old. It stems from the X500 standard. It has a standardized information model, structures, objects, attributes, etc. There are replication mechanisms. It is secure. And the access protocol is LDAP. This is standardized. There is an RFC for that, thank God. And very many different products talk that protocol. There is worldwide support. This is just marketing blurb, right? Worldwide support for it. There are very, very many directory-enabled applications. And last not least, many software vendors announced that LDAP is part of their core strategies. As far as the development path, the first implementation was LDAP v2. Nobody's doing that today. This is ancient history. Today's standard is LDAP v3, and we have different incarnations of LDAP v3 today. The first one being LDAP access to X500 products. The second one, LDAP access to proprietary products, proprietary protocols. And the third one is standalone LDAP servers. And if we have a look at the vendors, we can see products like Critical Path and Nexor on the left side, Novell eDirectory, Microsoft AD, Lotus Domino in the middle, and Sun One and Open LDAP on the right side. Okay? All these talk LDAP in theory. A couple of features here. Open LDAP conforms to LDAP v3, as we said. As far as the information model schemas and the administrative models are concerned, Open LDAP supports a whole plethora of RFCs that you probably never want to read. It has native Unicode support, schema checking, which is very nice because you can check a schema before actually putting it into production. It has access rights properties. You can run ACLs for groups, for example. You can run replication mechanisms, and it has LDAP data export and import, which is nice for backup purposes, for replicating LDAP servers, etc. Okay, this is just more rubbish. The most important thing is that suppose multiple database backends. As far as I know, I'm not the open LDAP expert, but as far as I know, there is also an SQL backend, right? So that you can even run LDAP on top of an SQL database if you want. It runs on all the most important operating systems which are in use today in the data center, most importantly Linux, and a couple of quasi-operating systems like the ones noted below. It has a whole plethora of tools, scripting tools. There is a Tickle interface. There is a Perl module. It has native PHP support, ASP for those who can't avoid it. It has C and C++ SDKs, and a couple of graphical frontends like KLDAP, GQ, or a product from the company Gonicus, which is named Goza, which is also like GQ, a PHP-based thing. So it's for all practical purposes open source as well. A couple of security features. It supports password encryption in various types. Crypt is no longer state-of-the-art today, as you know. Most people today run probably MD5, but as you know, there is an MD5 cracking contest going on today. So you can practically download an MD5 cracking client for various operating systems, run them on your workstation if you have a couple of spare CPU cycles. I expect most people to move to one of these SHA standards over time. But we have SHA-1 support in OpenLDAP today. We have group-based ACLs, some level of security using the TCP wrapper, and a couple of various authentication methods, and that's probably it. Just a short primer so that we know what we're talking about. This is a very simple and very straightforward structure how a Samba and OpenLDAP server infrastructure can look like. So what we have here, if the mouse pointer comes up, we have the PDC, the BDC, both talk to an OpenLDAP server about authentication. We have the clients over here that do the domain lock-on against one of the two. We have a file server with the associated storage. The file server gets the authorization from the PDC-BDC and offers the shares to the clients. Very straightforward, very simple, and that's basically what the German Bundestag is going to implement. It's slightly more complex than that, but that's just the basics. So the future implementation, this is just a draft because we're not finished yet with all the concepts. We're talking today about 170 servers with SUSE Linux. We don't know what the actual flavor is going to be. Currently, the tests are running on SUSE Professional 9.0, but this may change over time. The hardware is going to stay in place, where the machines are not that old. A couple of older IBM machines will be replaced by HP machines before too soon. The second thing which we found out with the help of Volker, thank you very much, is that you need to run the correct locale on the server in order to see the correct file names on both sides of the chain, that is, on the command line of the server and within the Windows client. If you don't do that, you see very interesting results on the server. And what we also found out is that if you access the server, for example, with an SSH client, like SSH from Linux machine or PuTTY or something like that, you need to set the locale on the client side as well. Within PuTTY, there is an option to activate UTF-8. On Linux machine, it's best to run the whole system with UTF-8. Unfortunately, SUSE chose not to put the whole system on UTF-8 beforehand, as opposed to a Red Hat Advanced Server 3.0, which is UTF-8 by default. SUSE is not, and so we had to learn something. Thanks again to Volker for pointing us in the right direction here. We will have multiple LDAP servers. There will be slave servers within the various entities spread across Berlin and outside. The file system is now turning to XFS. Initially, we were talking about X3, but we found out that XFS probably has better properties for this kind of operation. Data encryption is fully handled on the client side, so the server has nothing to do with file encryption. Files are encrypted and decrypted on the client, and the server just stores the encrypted files. And last not least, the customer chose not to implement any ACL support. Okay. Yeah. Sorry? It's probably historically motivated. I don't know the exact reasons for that. When the initial concepts were made last summer, they were talking about X3, and Samba 3.0 wasn't quite there yet. So the initial concepts were not made on the basis of Samba 3.0. We knew that Samba 3.0 was under Portas, but we then did not recommend to use ACLs because we did not know how comprehensive the implementation would be. So the decision was made on the customer side not to use ACLs. Today, it would not be a problem. The current testing is done with Samba 3.0.2a, and together with XFS, it would be no problem to implement POSIX ACLs, right? But it was that way. Maybe this will change over time, but for now, they don't have any. Data migration is a very interesting thing. We will have to move about 3.9 terabytes of data. Depending on the machine class, whether the machine will be replaced or not, there will be different mechanisms used. We tried probably everything, including the kitchen sink, to move the data from A to B, including mounting NTFS file systems on the target machine and copying everything over. It turned out that SMB client actually works best. My colleague in the back row created a test suite that contained file names with all these strange characters, which are very popular within the public sector, like euro sign, pound sign, dollar, the section, French accents, which is, it's EU, right? Various braces and brackets, the micron sign, everything else. And it turned out that SMB client was capable of copying everything over correctly. It was nice. The downside of that is that we only have a 100 Mbit backbone and many machines only have 10 Mbits. Okay, but it works. Everything else did work in a certain way as well, but lost one or the other character, strangely. We did SMB mount. You would think that SMB mount has the same character mapping backend as SMB client, but no, it does not have it. Thank you very much indeed. It doesn't. So we lost a couple of characters, and we always got these A tilde and blah, 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 you know. It was interesting. So for the machines that are being replaced, the old boxen, which are more than four years old now, the data will just be copied over to the new system. They will be replaced in the rack. The other machines will stay in place, and we will probably use transfer systems to copy the data to the transfer system and then back, or maybe, I don't know what the actual state is right now, but you get the idea. Maybe it's just transfer disks or something. As far as parent is concerned, LDAP is actually quite easy. There is nothing special. We had to implement the schema. We're using the Gonicus Samba 3 schema for that. The SSL certificates had to be created and a couple of administrative specs. This is an example. This is not the Bundestag, right? Yeah, that's right. I can't tell you the exact specs why the folks chose the other one. Huh? Why in the world was a schema different from the standard Samba 3 schema that comes with LDAP was used? I can't tell you the exact reasons for that. But this one proved to be very well, and it is very well supported within the Goza administration front end. Maybe that was the reason. Uwe, maybe you can give us more insight on that. Mm-hmm. Well, he's saying it's possible that we need to exchange to expand the schema, and it's probably more easy to do that.
Yeah. And it's possible that we have to extend the schema, but we have not changed the traditional schemas.
So this was pretty much usable out of the box. It was easier to use. In any case, the configuration for the LDAP server, this is just an example. The typical acme.com example, this is coming from a demo which we set up for a couple of other customers. But it's just the same. So nothing spectacular happening here. And on the Samba side, it's also very standard. There's nothing special going on. We're using the start TLS feature to run a secure connection to the LDAP server. Is there anything wrong here? It works. Okay. Just in case we step on one bug or two, we'll give you a hint. But by now, this works just fine. So, there are a couple of open issues, many of which have been resolved. We trapped into the Samba user workstations bug, which I am told will be resolved for 3.03, which is, as you probably know, Windows NT allows you to set up to 8 IP addresses or workstations from which a user may connect to a server, right? Up to 8. The Samba Open LDAP combo supports that as well, but unfortunately in 3.02a there is a bug which requires that you enter a workstation twice, one time without the backslashes and one time with the backslashes. I'm told this will be resolved in 3.03 by end of the month, hopefully. There is no such restriction like a maximum of 8 within the Samba Open LDAP combo, which is good, but this is just unclean, you know. Once you move to a clean solution which does not have the bug, you have all these dead bugs within the database, which isn't fine. Okay, so this will be resolved. The other one is bad logout attempts. I'm told that this will be resolved in 3.03 as well. I'm a little bit unsure how this will be propagated to LDAP. Just a remark. The as it seems, the current approach is to just propagate the fact that a client or that a user was locked out to the LDAP server, but this may be a bad idea because if you set a number of, let's just pick a figure, of a maximum of 5 bad logins, a user can attempt to log into the system 4 times on multiple workstations to multiple servers, and I don't think that's a good idea. So if you find a way to not just propagate the fact but also the number of bad attempts, I think it would be better security-wise, yeah?
The reason is that otherwise every bad login attempt causes inter-site network traffic.
Right.
A single user can deny all service the entire
infrastructure. Yeah. That's probably a trade-off between security and network traffic. Yeah, and there's things like Samba lock-on and log-off time, but I'm told that Windows NT4 doesn't handle that correctly either. And this is just 3.04. If that's solved by 2008, it's okay. Okay, that was pretty much it. Any questions so far? No questions. Yeah. Just get the mic.
Naturally, I'm interested in the issues that I was talking about in my speech yesterday, single sign-on on things other than Samba. Have you looked into that? Are you trying to allow Linux workstations to work with your system or some of the other issues I was talking about?
This is not part of the project.
So your project only contains the Samba PDC, but no...
That's right. Our part of the project is just the server side. The client side, the migration of all these old Windows NT 4 workstation PCs to Windows XP is a different project. That's not ours.
And running other servers for those XP workstations and things like mail servers and the like, are you responsible for?
Mail servers are something different. There is a mail service. It used to run on SMTP and IMAP before, and this will just be renewed.
And you managing to work that into the same domain and same password base and things like that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
With PAM LDAP.
Okay.
Yeah. I would not mention that on these slides because this is just about Samba. The mail system is integrated with PAM LDAP.
Okay.
It's easy. And IMAP as well.
Just a remark. We should all talk into the microphones. We are making a recording of the session here.
Yeah, everyone can hear your silly remarks better when you have the mic.
So you're actually using machines from IBM and HP. What were the attitudes of the vendor representatives to the project? I mean...
Sorry, I didn't get that.
What were the attitudes of the vendors, IBM, HP, to the project? How much help did they give you? What was their attitudes to going with a non-supported or the solutions that they don't officially...
That's a very nasty question.
I know.
I give you a couple of...
That's why I asked it, sorry.
You will be clue-betted offline afterwards. Okay, it's easy. Actually, we don't do that project by ourselves. It's a joint project, IBM and CC Compunet. IBM does a couple of things, we do a couple of things. They do a couple of concepts, and we do. Yes, you are right. The machines we talked about are not supported by the more recent variants of SUSE Linux. I addressed that a couple of times to make sure that as soon as somebody opens a call with IBM or with SUSE, doesn't get a nasty answer, hey, just get a supported configuration and call me back tomorrow or something. Yeah, you're right. It is an issue, but IBM tells us it will not be a problem. Yeah, I mean, this is a very public project. It's very prominent, and everyone is condemned to win. We must not lose on that. So, no, it is going to... It does work on the machines. We have SUSE Linux version 9, SUSE Linux Enterprise Server version 8 running on all these boxes, and it works. We had to learn some interesting things concerning internal and external disks, etc., but now everything is pretty much resolved. Yeah.
Is the common criteria certification to them?
No, it was never an issue. As you know, there is a single RPM package for /8, which implements the common criteria for /8. There is none for SUSE Professional 9 yet. But I would expect the /8 package to more or less run on /8 on SUSE Professional 9 as well. I've never tested it, but it was never an issue here.
And which calendaring server are going there to?
None. Interestingly, the Bundestag does not have any calendaring service in digital form, but it's very analog. They have lots of secretaries. Yeah, just imagine, if the members of the Bundestag want to set up a meeting of 3 or 4 people, they have to send their secretaries to have a pre-meeting before to come up with a date or something. Yeah, they don't have any. So in terms of group work and collaborating system, they are still in the Stone Age. Not only as far as that is concerned, I'm afraid. I mean, it's my tax money too. Any more questions?
Is the fact that OpenLDAP has no master-master replication a problem for the project?
There's no problem.
Okay, short answers. Still some question?
Do you use Samba for printing?
I very much expect so. Yes, it will, because the Samba servers all work as print and file servers. As you see, most of the printers are local in any case. So, but it will be used. It's Samba and COPS.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. One more question. I didn't get the point. Why is the IBM hardware not supported by SUSE Linux? What I have seen with IBM hardware, it's mostly supported.
Yeah, but you don't ask me for that. Ask SUSE and IBM. The 4500 is not supported by any SUSE Linux variant because nobody took the change and did it. The 5500 is supported by older versions. I think it's supported by /7 and SUSE Professional 8.1. 8.1 was the last consumer version for which any hardware certification was made. Back then, most of the big Linux distributors chose to ask their customer to use the enterprise version. It's the same as the case with Red Hat. You don't get any certification for these machines for Red Hat 9, for example. Just the same. They want the users, the corporate customers, to use the enterprise servers, which is just a question of the business model. You can't offer maintenance and support for 5 years for a consumer version at a street price of maybe $49. You can't do that.
Since there are hundreds of servers and terabytes of data, are there any clustering mechanisms and high availability stuff?
No.
Why?
They never had any. Okay. No, there aren't. If a server is down, it's down.
Okay.
And there, to answer the next question, there is no SAN either. So all disks are attached locally to the machines. There is no fiber channel mechanism, nothing. As I said, Stone Age in the way.
if they lose data, the secretaries probably will reorganize them.
It is not a problem. It is not a problem because, as you know, in the public sector, everything is copied anyway before you put it in the wastebasket. Everything is printed on paper, so they probably have a very robust backup mechanism on paper anyway. Which is why they have 3,000 local printers. You wouldn't think that they need it. There is.
Okay, thanks, Harald. More applause for Harald. In the meantime, did you know that Microsoft published the first SourceForge project this week?
Did they?
Very interesting. I mean, maybe you can do a Samba installer with these MSI build stuff.